Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering.
On this vote, the yeas are 230, the nays are 197, present is one. Article 1 is adopted.
That was House Speaker Nancy Pelosi announcing yesterday that the House of Representatives had officially impeached President Donald J. Trump, just the third time a sitting U.S. president has been impeached in our nation's history. For more, we're joined by WBUR senior news correspondent Kimberly Atkins, who's in the nation's capital. Kimberly, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Tiziana.
So this is, it almost seems silly to say historic. That doesn't seem big enough a word. It seems important for our country to know what it felt like there yesterday. Kimberly, can you put us in the room?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because leading up to yesterday on Capitol Hill around Washington, it sort of felt like business as usual. The gravity of the moment hadn't really hit. Certainly by last night, it had. I mean, I think it began with Congressman Steny Hoyer's closing argument for Democrats that he made that talked about the history and the solemnity of what was happening. And, you know, several lawmakers, when they were casting their votes and after they cast their votes, were emotional about what they were doing. It definitely felt heavy on them as they did this. A few people tried to applaud after Nancy Pelosi gaveled and she admonished them with a gesture to get them to stop. But for the most part, it was a very solemn event.
Here she is talking about sort of the dichotomy of the moment.
December 18th, a great day for the Constitution of the United States, a sad one for America.
There's been a lot of talk today about sort of the way she used both her eyes and her hand to keep people from celebrating in the moment inappropriately. Today, do people seem to be reflecting that dichotomy or is it just heaviness today?
There is some heaviness. I talked to a few lawmakers on the Capitol this morning. That heaviness, the solemnity is still on them. You know, some of them privately, some Democrats expressed to me real disappointment and more about the way Republicans acted in the things that they said yesterday. One said actually it was disgusting. He described it because of the solemnity of this. I don't think the importance of this is lost on anyone.
So I want to juxtapose two people's comments from yesterday, kind of to highlight the fact that it, to me as a listener, Kimberly, it felt like no one was speaking to anyone else in the room. So first we have Georgia Representative Barry Loudermilk, and the second is Massachusetts Representative Joe Kennedy, who is addressing his children. Here we go.
When Jesus was falsely accused of treason, Pontius Pilate gave Jesus the opportunity to face his accusers. During that sham trial, Pontius Pilate afforded more rights to Jesus than the Democrats have afforded this president in this process.
Dear Ellie and James, this is a moment that you will read about in your history books. Today, I will vote to impeach the President of the United States.
Kimberly, what did you make of the rhetoric in the room yesterday, and who do you think it was for?
Yeah, I think the Republicans were they had their audience, which was the President of the United States and his supporters, who in many cases they share those supporters and saying what they wanted them to hear. For Democrats, they were trying to make the case for their supporters and people who believe that the president should be impeached. The divide in Congress, if you look at polls, is reflected to the real divide in America on this issue of impeachment. So I think each side was addressing the other folks who were on their side.
You know, there's this new question that seems to be emerging today. I suppose if you'd been paying super close attention over the last couple of weeks, you knew it was out there. But people have turned their attention to the question of if and when Speaker Pelosi sends the impeachment to the Senate. Some have said she should wait until Mitch McConnell gives them the rules they want. If she waits, or I guess supposedly if she doesn't, but mostly if she waits, is there a risk of losing public support for the impeachment in that delay?
Yeah, there's not only a risk of losing public support, there's a risk of undermining the Democrats' main argument in moving forward on impeachment, which is that the president's actions are urgent, they're ongoing, and it presents a real threat right now. And I asked Congressman Joe Kennedy about that this morning, about that risk, and this is what he said.
Look, I guess there's some risk to anything. I think there's also a risk to sending these articles over immediately, understanding that the Senate Majority Leader has violated the oath that he will take as a juror in this case, to be an impartial juror, who has said literally that he is not one.
And he's referring to the fact that Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell called himself in. He said he was not an impartial juror, and he has declined Democrats' requests to bring witnesses at the trial.
Kimberly, you and I have talked a lot over the last few months on this show, helping listeners understand what's happening in Washington, dissecting it, explaining it. I got to tell you, I was really struck today by how sad I am, how heavy my heart feels. How do we heal after this as a country? How do we put the pieces back together, regardless of how any one individual may feel about the decision that was taken last night?
You know, I'm not sure that anybody really knows the answer to that, but it is something that lawmakers do talk about. They talk about the division within the Congress and within the country, and they talk about what it takes to get beyond that, realizing that it's something that will probably exist when Donald Trump is no longer president, whether it is after his term ends or if he's removed. So I don't know if people know the answer to that, but it is something that people talk about here.
That is WBUR senior news correspondent Kimberly Atkins. Kimberly, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
So let's turn now to another person who has guided us through understanding this process over the last few months, WBUR legal analyst Nancy Gertner. Judge Gertner is also a retired federal judge, senior lecturer at Harvard Law School. Welcome back again.
I'm glad to be here.
So there are so many questions that I have for you to put things in context. I think where I'd like to start, we've heard quite a bit, especially in the last couple of days, about how unprecedented decisions that the Democrats have made around process are, unprecedented the way the Republicans used their rhetoric. But this is only the third time in history, so it seems like most things are unprecedented in a moment like this. But we use precedent as a way to compare and contrast people's behavior in order to try to figure out who's acting in good faith. So how do we proceed when there really isn't a lot of precedent to use as a measuring stick?
Well, there is precedent for the procedures in the House. And so the contrast is, did the president get less fair procedures than Nixon got, than Clinton got? And my understanding is that both in terms of the timing and the procedures, which is initially a confidential, secret proceeding, much like a grand jury where both Republicans and Democrats could question witnesses, as well as the stuff on the floor, the procedures on the floor, they were identical to past impeachment proceedings. And that is to say, Clinton on the one hand and Nixon on the other. Nixon never got to a vote on impeachment. So in terms of procedure, you know, this looks to be exactly the same.
I noticed, though, that you said in the House.
In the House.
So now we're likely to go to the Senate.
Right.
What about precedent there?
Well, there really is not much except for Clinton. But the Constitution tells us next to nothing about how this should be done. It just says the Senate shall have the power to try impeachments. So the implication of try is a trial, right? And then the next sentence is, when sitting for this purpose, the senator shall be, quote, on oath or affirmation. And that suggests that they will be juror-like. And that's pretty much, and the Chief Justice shall preside. That's pretty much all it says. But it clearly conveys the implication that this is trial-like with the senator sitting as jurors and arguably impartial. That certainly collides with the fact that this is a political process. But it is a political process that has trial-like aspects.
So I want to unpack a couple of things. You've been pretty clear with us over the last few months that the impeachment procedures in the House, that is a political process. All along, as we've talked about the handoff to the Senate, it seems that we do have this expectation of a trial. If you were going to sort of balance out on a continuum, in the Senate, the expectation that it's really trial-like versus it's another political process that resembles in some ways a trial. Where is it reasonable to expect that it ought to come out?
Well, it's a hard question. So Clinton really was a trial, which was the Chief Justice presiding. One side was presenting evidence. The other side was contesting it. I don't think that they had to present witnesses because, in fact, all they had to do was present the findings of the House. And then there was a vote. It's political in this sense that because you're talking about the President of the United States and the Constitution reposes his power in Congress, courts are not involved. Courts are really not involved at all. So it's political in the sense that the ultimate decision maker is the Senate. But it's trial-like because it's unlike anything else the Senate does. The Senate is acting in a different function here. That's the best I can say. But surely announcing at the outset, you know, I'm biased, is troubling. Very troubling.
So what Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said was, everything I do during this, I'm coordinating with the White House counsel. There will be no difference between the president's position and our position as to how to handle this. In the realm of a trial, how does one process that if when we're thinking about this as attempting to be trial-like?
Well, let's sort of translate that, okay? So I'm trying Tiziana Dearing as my defendant. You've done something dastardly.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. And I say that all the procedures in the courtroom will be done in coordination with what you want. That's one-sided. it lacks precedent. Certainly, I might consider what you want. I might want to balance that against what the people who are prosecuting this want, but to suggest that everything we do here is going to be what one side wants suggests it's not trial-like at all.
One of the other things that has come up that feels different than a trial is this question about whether there will be evidence, new evidence or new testimony.
Right.
How, according to the, I think you just read us
I
everything
did.
The Constitution
doesn't
says.
Doesn't say much, right.
So I was going to say, you may have already answered this question because my question was, what does the Constitution say about whether or not there should or could or ought to be anything new that happens on the Senate side?
Nothing.
Nothing.
It says nothing on that. There's nothing to, but the rules of the Senate trial are determined by the Senate. And so, and that should be by a majority rule. So they could, the Senate could vote to allow witnesses. There's no reason. And if the House impeachment is like a grand jury, the presentation of allegations, and the Senate is like a trial, witnesses would not be far from what a trial would do.
Although if they didn't take witnesses, if I understand you correctly, they would also not be far from the president in the Clinton Senate process where they also did not take witnesses.
That's right. They essentially discussed the House report. So but the bottom line is that essentially the House, the Senate, a majority of the Senate could vote to change, to make this more fair rules. Mitt Romney, Susan Collins, Barbara Murkowski, they could change the rules to make it more fair.
You're naming some people who are known as more moderate Republicans.
That's right.
On the Senate.
That's right.
Side. All right. So the other person who seems to be bending rules, although we don't really have a lot of rules because this is only the third time in history, is Nancy Pelosi in suggesting that she's going to make her own decisions about when and how to hand this impeachment, the articles, over to the Senate. People seem very upset about that. How unusual or, again, it's hard. We don't have a lot to compare it
right,
to.
Right, that's right.
I'm just going to say weird. How weird is it to have the Speaker of the House saying, I'll get to it when I get to it, depending on what I see?
Well, I think that there is no precedent for it. The Constitution says nothing about it. Presumably the House usually doesn't have a role in what the Senate rules would be. So it's unusual in that respect. It's hard to say she has violated anything since the Constitution doesn't say anything about it.
Could she conceivably never hand them over?
She could try. And then what's the recourse? That's the problem. You're now dealing with decisions that are made by the political branches as to which courts typically do not intervene, right? Imagine she says, I'm going to turn it over January 1st, and the Republicans go roaring into court. Pretend I'm the judge in that case. The likelihood, 9 times out of 10, a judge, or 10 times out of 10, a judge would say, this is a political question, as to which courts have no jurisdiction. The Constitution doesn't speak to it. We don't have jurisdiction over the rules of the Senate or the rules of the House. So what she can do may be determined by what kind of redress if she doesn't do what people expect. And I can't see any redress.
So to some extent, whatever it is, it is what it is.
Good, good point.
Okay.
And what are you citing on that? This is deering on it is what
right,
it is. I got it.
Right.
Okay.
Let it be known. So I guess then the last question I have, because you've said a couple of times the courts will stay out of this. This is a political process. It's trial-like, but it's not a trial. And then we have the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States overseeing it, should Pelosi ever decide to give it to the Senate and they decide on rules. So yeah, I'm going to continue to keep it simple. What's that about?
Yeah, well, it's, the Constitution just says that the Chief Justice shall preside. Now, what that means is that he then is the enforcer of whatever rules have been passed.
All
so
right.
That if the Senate says the rules are 1 through 10, he is the enforcer of those rules and administers oaths, et cetera. That's also no different than an ordinary trial, right? I didn't get to determine the rules of evidence. They were determined by someone else. So that's really no different. And I can't imagine, knowing him, that he would intervene in any considerable degree.
All right. So last question. There's more to come. What are you watching for?
Well, I think that the pressure on Pelosi will be sooner rather than later to turn this over. Yeah. And the Senate, there are risks, I suppose, of McConnell making this look like a kangaroo court, really. There are risks. Then that becomes another asterisk on the president's, quote, exoneration here. So, I mean, my hope, and this is not a prediction, my hope is that there will be some modification of what McConnell had anticipated and that Pelosi will turn over the articles of impeachment sooner rather than later.
Okay, that is WBUR legal analyst Nancy Gertner, retired federal judge and senior lecturer at Harvard Law School. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Stay with us. Coming up, as we head towards the end of 2019, we are going to look back at the last decade in religion. I'm Tiziana Deering. This is Radio Boston.